Welcome to Worldview from WBEZ. I'm Jerome McDonnell. Worldview ends its 25-year run tomorrow. In recent weeks, we've been reminiscing, reflecting, and sharing some laughs with former producers, and we will talk with several today. Let's get started with Andrea Wenzel. Andrea Wenzel is now an assistant professor of journalism at Temple University's Klein College of Media and Communication. Great to have you, Andrea.
It's a delight to be here with you, Jerome, even though I can't actually see you, but...
And also in the studio with me is Nissa Ree, who started at Worldview in 2004. She is executive director of the 90 Days, 90 Voices project, documenting migrant, refugee, and asylum seeker issues in Chicago. Great to see you, Nissa.
Yeah. Hi, Jerome. Hi, Andrea.
Andrea, I wanted to ask, first of all, about the U of C pipeline, because like today's show, we're going to talk to several people who basically you funneled into the show through the University of Chicago, where you were an alumni yourself. What happened there? Because I don't remember.
Very good question. I think so. You guys let me in the door, and thanks to also to Edie Rabinowitz, who I think we'll hear from as well, for doing that. And we needed interns. And, you know, honestly, I probably at that time, very early in my career, it was my very first job, had no business having interns, but somehow we made that work. And we had a regular rotation of people who not every time. We had some great folks from other places, but we did have quite a few from University of Chicago.
All right. Explain what you're doing now. You're a great big professor of journalism. You got this splashy article in the Columbian Journalism Review that I was reading. That's cool.
Thank you. I'm definitely not splashy, but I am I'm an assistant professor at Temple University, and I do research and teach on engaged journalism and solutions journalism. The good things in journalism, the bad things in journalism, a lot of things I got inspired from being working with your show long ago. So it's been interesting to kind of cross over to the other side and, you know, be doing the academic thing. But I think of you guys often.
Now you wrote your master's thesis about Worldview. Is that what it was?
I sure did. I sure did.
Wow.
I was just thinking about that the other day. It somehow come full circle. I remember one of my favorite parts of that. So I was looking at U.S. news coverage of global affairs and Worldview's approach and then other, you know, approaches. And somehow that led to us, once I was kind of there as an intern and then as a producer, we had this map of the world on our cubby wall that we would put pins in and kind of use it as a way of making sure the show tried to cover as much, you know, global ground as possible. And I remember, you know, being like, no, we don't have enough pins right now in South America. You know, we need to do something about that. Or, oh my gosh, there's like just a hole where, you know, Israel-Palestine is because we've done too much coverage there, or, you know, whatever the case might be. We kind of use that as a way of keeping track of things. So I guess now that I think about it, I kind of started out with the wonky stuff, and then I left it, and then I've gotten sucked back into it.
Well, you've come full circle. We all do.
Yes.
And now, Nissa, tell us about your projects that you work on. 90 Days, 90 Voices has been a breath of fresh air in the media landscape here.
Oh, thank you, Jerome. Yeah, so I really trace it back to my time on Worldview, too, because I started 90 Days, 90 Voices like 2.5 years ago now, right after Trump signed the Muslim travel ban in 2017 with two other journalists here in Chicago. And the idea was really just to boost Chicago's coverage of immigrants and these kind of migration issues in light of all the stuff that was happening with the Trump administration. And it was meant to be a temporary project, and we all had full-time other jobs. But it's grown and grown, and now we're an incorporated nonprofit, our own 501c3, and we just had a story co-published in the Chicago Reader yesterday and have been doing a lot of stories about asylum seekers in particular this year.
What do you remember about working on Worldview, Nis? I remember when you were an intern and you were so good and you were making me do things and keep cracking the whip, keeping me in line. It was awesome.
That's so funny. When I was an intern, I was still in college at University of Chicago, of course. And it was only after my sophomore year there. So I was like pretty young still, and I knew nothing about radio. But what I remember was Dave really being so patient, Dave McGuire being so patient with me, teaching me everything he knew about radio, from editing to how sound works, all the nitty gritty stuff, you know, how to put together a radio interview piece. And I was so indebted to him because I felt like, you know, I knew a lot how to research and write from school, but, you know, that kind of aspect, I had no idea. So when I came back as a producer, then when I was hired as a producer after I graduated, I was able to jump right in.
Yeah, that was great. I really was so happy to have you.
Thanks.
It was because I was like, oh, who can we get to fill in? I don't know. Andrea, you were leaving town again. You were going to somewhere, I think, and we needed somebody. Yeah. And I was like, gosh, let's get Nissa. Andrea, explain what you did, because you kept leaving the show and coming back and going places. What did you do?
Well, you know, you do this show about the world, and sometimes people want to go look at the world. So I had a great opportunity to take two leaves of absence. The first one was to go and on a Fulbright teach in Ghana, where I taught, and then I also randomly made a movie there. But then I came back.
What was the name of that female superhero?
Yes, it was a female superhero movie called Madam Pink.
She fought domestic violence and things.
Yes, she did.
With martial arts, right?
Yes, she had superpowers and happened to know martial arts. And
that film was way ahead of its time.
It was. It's kind of, you know, Me Too meets Black Panther. It definitely was out of its time, and definitely I was way out of my depths in making this.
I only saw the mic boom a couple times.
You know, we did okay for me paying for it out of my Fulbright money. So
all right. And then the other time you went to where?
I went to Sri Lanka, and that was when the civil war was still going on. And I was working with Internews, and our goal was to set up media houses where we brought together journalists from the Tamil, Sinhalese, and Muslim communities, and had them do reporting together and trying to, you know, see how we could do reporting in a difficult situation, and including some more like solutions oriented reporting as well. So that was. That was great. That was very challenging. And then I came back from that. So.
And then after you spent a little more time with us, you went to Afghanistan?
Yeah, I went to work with BBC Media Action, and I worked with a program there where I was first brought in to train Afghan women on a radio program, and then I ended up working with their kind of broader portfolio of things, which included, as a highlight, working with a radio soap opera there that's been running for, I think, more than 25 years now, and looks at kind of lots of different serious issues, you know, like educating girls, health issues, but it does it through an entertaining lens, and so much so that people would, you know, send in presents when characters on the show got married. So it was a really remarkable experience to be able to do that.
Were you able to work a female superhero into that soap opera at all?
There was some magical realism, but fortunately they knew better than to let me mess around with any of the scripts. This was all in Dari and Pashto and local languages, and it was all Afghan-led in terms of the programming and the writing and everything else.
Andrea Wenzel is a professor at Temple University. Nissa Ree is the executive director of 90 Days, 90 Voices. And we're reminiscing about their time producing Worldview. The program ends tomorrow. And I wanted to bring up the Global Activism Series. Andrea, what was the idea behind the Global Activism Series? You are the one who started this thing.
I think basically I was very depressed doing this show where every day we were so often talking about depressing things in the world, you know, genocide, war, everything else. And I wanted to, you know, I was frustrated with that. And then I stumbled across, I don't actually remember how I met him, but a guy named Gordon Lulea, who was a taxi driver originally from Zambia, and he was sending medical supplies back to Zambia. And I, you know, started talking to him. I was interviewing him, and I was going to have him do like a personal story about his experience. And he ended up, you know, sharing that the reason he was doing this is because his daughter had died in that same hospital he was sending supplies to, because there weren't, like, she had meningitis and they didn't have the proper medicines. And so his, you know, goal was to make sure no other parent had to go through that. And so it was this really kind of moving story, and we broadcast it, and it got a really helpful response, and a lot of people got involved in helping him out, and was like, this is great. You know, why can't we do this more often? And I think we tried for a little while to do them as a weekly, with like feature stories where the people would kind of tell their own story and we'd have sound and everything else. And that was a lot of work, frankly. And we, so it transitioned from that to being more interviews, and then you guys kind of just kept going with it after I left. And it's one of the, you know, I think I look back on that very fondly, and I do research now on solutions journalism. And I often think about how what the Global Activism series has done is kind of a precursor to that in a lot of ways, because, you know, it was doing some really great work.
And Nissa, you took over running the series back in the heyday of the Global Activism Expos and things, and got to see it blossom in a way.
Yeah, the expos were amazing. I still remember, you know, I think I saw at least two, and it grew so big, and so many people from all over the city, even suburbs, came out to meet all these people who have been featured on the show. And there was such a great energy at a time when there was a lot of dark politics going on. To see all the people doing good in the world, it was really uplifting.
Yeah, I think that's our best legacy.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
It is. And Andrea, you did a lot of crazy things, I got to say. explain, you like did this road trip one time, and you were looking for, you know, Jesse Helms or something. What were you doing?
Frankly, I'm not sure why anyone let me do this, because I was like fresh out of college and didn't know what I was doing in terms of like, I was not, you know, trained at producing a radio documentary. And yet somehow I think, Tori Malatia, the former leader there, you know, took it upon his good grace, and let me take some time to go do this. And I drove around the U.S. Trying to find out more about the John Birch Society and the people who were against the U.N. And this was before 9/11. And so, you know, at the time, it was just kind of this like wacky, you know, thing of people who wanted to pull the U.S. out of the U.N. And so we ended up in, you know, going around to where Jesse Helms was from and talking to people there, and then going to D.C. and trying to find him and talking to one of his aides, who must have been very confused about why this like 21-year-old was doing this. And then going to the U.N. and talking to people there. So it was a pretty strange documentary, and I would like to find it someday, but it's probably in my parents' basement rotting where it probably belongs. But I think we the best part of it was, is I remember we made it a 4th of July special.
Absolutely. That's total worldview style.
I stayed up all night the night before that editing it. And I remember, yes, I remember the fireworks were going on and I was trying to put music underneath it. It's very surreal.
Nissa, I remember a trip that we took to Michoacan, and we went to Morelia. And mm-hmm. I mean, it resonates a lot with your work with 90 Days, 90 Voices these days.
Yeah, that was an amazing trip. You and I and Alexander Solomon went to Mexico, and we were talking to reverse migrants. So people from Mexico who had come to Chicago and then gone back to Mexico. And it was really cool way to just to explore that area and to meet people who had such strong ties to both Chicago and that area.
And I remember we were having lunch at a restaurant on the square, and it was a kind of, you know, nice restaurant on the square. And the waiter said, oh, hi, you know, my dad worked at WVON as a broadcast engineer for 30 years. And I decided I liked life down here better, and I've come back down here. Mm-hmm. And so we started doing shout outs to people. You know, we would just say, hey, do you know anybody in Chicago, to these people in Morelia? And everybody knew somebody in Chicago, and they would just say hi to them.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a fun trip.
Well, it's been fun working with you two. Andrea Wenzel is a Worldview producer from 1998 to 2008. She is now assistant professor of journalism at Temple University. Nissa Ree started at Worldview as an intern in 2004, as a producer in 2006, and she is now executive director of the 90 Days, 90 Voices project, documenting migrant, refugee, and asylum seekers in Chicago. You can visit the website and check out more on the 90 Days, 90 Voices project. It's great talking with you both. I'm sorry we don't have more time. I'll talk to you both soon.
Congratulations, Jerome.
Thank you.
Worldview is produced by Steve Bynum, Dave McGuire, and for the last time, Breeze Lutke Stallman. Beginning Monday, I'm going to call her Breeze Richardson. And so watch me doing the credits here and see how many times I mess that up in the next few weeks. But we'll be talking about Breeze Richardson producing Worldview for the next few weeks or so after this. And thanks to Harold Britton for engineering today. I'm Jerome McDonnell, and you've been listening to Worldview from Chicago Public Radio.
That's me back in 2005 trying to remember to call Breeze Richardson on the air after she got married. Breeze is now the Director of Marketing and Communications at the Kemper Museum of Contemporary Art in Kansas City. It is great to talk with you, Breeze.
Thanks, Jerome. It's so nice to hear your voice.
What have you been doing? you and your husband moved back to Kansas City, back to Kansas, where you guys came from.
That's right. So I had left Lawrence, Kansas in 2002 to come to the University of Chicago and study at the Harris School of Public Policy. And that led me to WBEZ, where I started on Worldview, but then stayed until 2013 when my then husband, Kelsey, and I, and we had two boys, moved back to Kansas. And I worked in government for a while, and then have been here at the Contemporary Art Museum for the last 2 years, really doing the same thing, telling stories and providing access to community to talk about important issues of the day. And now I get to do it in the context of a free contemporary art museum in a pretty classic urban Midwest environment.
Breeze, you know, it's interesting. The digital age has, you know, brought a lot of things. And you were the first person I knew who was playing Final Fantasy, I believe it was your game.
And that's right.
You were involved in this multiplayer game, and you were deeply involved in it. You had a little character, and you were playing with people all over, and the people in the game were sending you wedding presents and stuff. You had become friends with all these people in the game. And this was the first person I ever knew who had this kind of relationship with people. And we started doing stories about that.
That's absolutely right. You know, grad school had been grueling. I was also a full-time activist. And when I finally settled down and was done with school and was, just working a 9-to-5 like a normal person, I started playing Final Fantasy XI. And I did. I connected with people really all over the world and became good friends with people. And it was just a really interesting way to kind of explore community, definitely in a different way, but go on quests and explore things. And I remember when I got really obsessed with Bitcoin or Gil farmers, rather, like this currency that you used in the game, which you'd spend a lot of time like working to earn, people would sell on the like proverbial black market. And so there were these farms, these factories, predominantly in China, where people would, and I thought it was so unfair and that we needed to do a story about it. So we did. We like found someone to talk to about this whole underground economy of people who earned real money farming for fake money for then people largely in the Western world to cheat and purchase instead of earning it for themselves.
It's still every bit as creepy today as it was then. I remember we also did a story about in Korea, the first court case that came into a legitimate court about somebody's coins in a game that they were playing, and they got stolen virtually in the game, and they had decided to hear this court case and start litigating the virtual world.
Your memory is so good. You know, and I think this really shows how worldview as a community of producers and our interests and how our lives intersected, you know, really played out in the show. You know, things we were interested in, things that we were following in the news, you know, ultimately so many of them, I think, from all of our walks of life, like made it onto the show as things that we thought other people would be interested in and want to hear about and talk about. And we had the whole globe to kind of look for those stories. So, you know, there was no 2 days that have ever been the same on your show.
Breeze, you were the person who kind of took the global activism segment and blew it up into the expo when you moved to the marketing department and we had an in there. That was exciting.
That was exciting. You know, it was something we had talked about when I was interning on the show and supporting that segment and then went on to produce that segment each week, that we had this really unique opportunity to meet these people, these real life people, and not only share their stories with listeners on the air, but become friends with them and invite them back and hear about, you know, as their organizations would grow, hear those stories. And when I went over to the marketing side of things and I had an opportunity to think about what live events WBEZ should create, it was just natural for me to think the global activism segment should really grow into the Global Activism Expo. And at its height, we had over 5,000 people coming together on a single day to walk around a large expo center type space and go from table to table to table and meet these incredible individuals and hear about their organizations and really shop for the right volunteer opportunity to get involved however it fit for you wherever you were at that point in your life.
And this was, you know, not a normal marketing lift. It was a strange thing to like say, we need 150 tables and we need, you know, outlets. And it was a strange thing to do.
Yeah, and you guys really collaborated with me on that. I mean, it wouldn't have ever happened if not for the, you know, kind of back end of things of keeping in touch with all these people and the whole, you know, database side of things of being able to organize that many different individuals who are often traveling at any given time to far-flung parts of the world. And I think it really spoke to their organizational strengths, the volunteers that worked with them that would, you know, raise their hand and say, absolutely, I'll staff a table at that event because I'd love to, you know, have the opportunity to expose more people to this organization.
And I'm still hooked in with all those people, Breeze. I'm going to the Women's Global Education Project event in a week from Monday. And, you know, I'm seeing them all the time.
Oh, that's so great.
What else do you remember about doing the show?
Well, you know, it's been really fun to think about this opportunity to speak with you and think about those days, which were a long, long time ago. But, you know, I think what I remember most is that working on Worldview was my first like real job. And I was a kid who went straight from high school into college, straight from college into graduate school. And so when I came on to Worldview in 2004, it really set the tone for me of what a workplace should be like, what work-life family should feel like. As I've gone on to have staff of my own and mentor countless interns and really create what it looks like to have a workplace and a workplace culture, I think so much about what was, you know, influenced for me in my life, professionally and personally, because of worldview. You know, I used to love us going out to lunch. As a Kansas kid, I had not been exposed to half of the ethnic cuisines that I had the opportunity to go explore with you guys. I feel like there was a year where we had some around the world challenge and we're like seeking out every corner of Chicago to go out and eat. And Indian food is still like a staple in my family, which was I was very much introduced to by going to the buffets downtown with you guys.
Yeah, we're going to one tomorrow night.
See, that's awesome. And I'm happy to say that, you know, when we returned to Kansas, whatever that was, 13 years later, there's a lot more ethnic cuisine here in the region than there was when I left. So I feel like we got to bring a lot of those new found love for food back home and get to keep eating that stuff.
One more thing, Breeze. I remember you liked the map a lot. Where we were talking before about we would put a pin in the map every day to kind of make sure we were moving the ball around so that everybody got a chance in the worldview. And you really formalized it, went for colors, you had data, you went all in on
that. You know,
that.
I did. I absolutely did. I think you have to blame the Harris School of Public Policy for that.
I knew that was
having
coming.
Me come right out of grad school, I was. But I think it goes both ways because I don't think people stop and have the opportunity to think enough about what goes into producing a show like Worldview and the willingness of you and Steve and Dave to like listen to my pie chart created analysis every month about the proportion of women that we had on the air and what we could do to increase that number and what parts of the world we were talking about and how we could be equitable in the parts of the world that we were giving coverage to, you know, I think really underscores just how much it was a team and how systems like that, you know, help you stay accountable even to your own goals.
Well, right on, Breeze. That was terrific. And I'm sorry we're not in touch more. I'm so glad I could talk with you.
Me too. And my phone's blowing up. People are texting me saying that they're hearing me live on the radio right now. So thank you for reconnecting me to Chicago. And let's absolutely stay in touch.
Breeze Richardson co-produced Worldview from 2003 to 2005 and is now in Kansas City as Director of Marketing and Communications with the Kemper Museum of Contemporary Art. So that's terrific to talk with Breeze Richardson. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk with producer number 3, Edie Rabinowitz, who is also a professor of journalism. I'm Jerome McDonnell. You're listening to Worldview on WBEZ. This is Worldview on WBEZ. I'm Jerome McDonnell, talking with former producers and reminiscing about the show. The show ends tomorrow. With me is producer number 2, Edie Rabinowitz. There was Gretchen, then there was Edie, then I started losing track. But it's great to see Andrew.
Yeah.
Andrew
yeah.
was number 3. Great to see you, Edie.
Oh, it's great to be here, Jerome.
And tell people what you're doing now.
People
will remember you were a reporter at one time here.
Yeah. I've become a professor over at Northeastern Illinois University, and I'm the journalism professor over there. But I mean, the journalism professor. That's all we got. So
you're the best.
I'm the only. By default, I'm the best. But it's a great place. So
now, what do you remember about working the show? It was pretty a long time ago.
Yeah, I think it was 97 to 98. And I just remember every day it was something new, Jerome. I mean, it was really, really exciting. I think I met 7 or 8 Nobel Peace Prize winners, you know.
In just a couple years.
And I think it was just, yeah, a little bit over a year. Yeah. So it was fascinating. And it kind of set me up for the rest of my life in terms of international affairs.
How so?
Well, right after I did this, I went and I did what was called the Pew International Fellowship. And I went to Panama, and I went to Guyana, and with Panama, I talked with one of the sources before I went down there that I learned about through Worldview that I think we had on during that period, Gustavo Garrity, who's an investigative reporter.
He's a legendary journalist.
Okay, tell us a little bit about him.
He was basically responsible for all the information that ousted Alberto Fujimori from Peru, and he had to flee the country because he revealed all the drug dealings of his CIA-type
director in there, and he fled to Panama and started journalisming in Panama and got in trouble there too.
Yeah, that's when I got to meet him. He was taking on President, it was Valladares at the time, and I was working on a piece about the gag laws in Panama that anybody who criticized Valladares could be taken to court. And
I'm sure that could never happen in this country.
Back then, it couldn't have. So, but, you know, and I talk with my students a lot about, they actually issued licenses for journalists to practice, and we talk about what's the problem with that. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
What do you remember about, I'll tell you my overriding impression of us doing this together, Edie,
yes,
was we were too much alike.
Oh,
and
okay.
we didn't care
in height,
about,
you mean, yeah.
Not at all in height, but we didn't care about the deadline. Like, we were willing to wait until the very last second to get the right guest and stuff. We were so like, well, what do you want? Yeah, let's do the best thing. So we're gonna wait forever, and we almost crashed the show a lot.
Really? Okay.
That's my overriding memory.
Okay.
Edie, we're too much alike.
Okay. Well, I do remember making a lot of calls on the morning of. You know, we would read the paper. I mean, we wanted to be current. So we would, you know, read the paper. You'd read it on the train in from Arlington Heights, you know, six or seven of them, Financial Times. We would be totally updated. And then we had like three or four calls. We had a couple things figured out in advance, but we always knew that the top segment we wanted to have as current as possible, and we wanted to get the exact right person. And that was the other thing that was amazing is we could get the exact right person because you had this incredibly thick Rolodex, although they don't call it a Rolodex anymore.
This was like pre-computer era.
Yeah.
Pre-Facebook,
yeah, there was a big,
everything.
A binder full of guests there were.
One of the things I remember is you giving Jose Ramos Horta, the Nobel Peace Prize winner from East Timor, a ride to the train or something.
A ride to his hotel. And there he told me something that ended up becoming a This American Life story, too.
I kidnap, I torture. All of these are problems that people face.
Noble calling.
And that's what has to be.
This is Jose Ramos Horta on an international news program called Worldview. It's broadcast on Chicago's public radio station. Horta is an exile from his homeland in East Timor. He spent two decades as the leading international figure denouncing the invasion of his country by Indonesia. He won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1996 for his efforts to hinder the oppression of a small people. But before his appearance on this radio program, Worldview, he confided in producer Edie Rabinowitz that someday, if peace comes to his country, he has another dream. He would like to do a radio program himself, one like Howard Stern's. He'd seen Stern's movie, Private Parts, on an airplane. We reached Horta at the United Nations offices in Geneva.
That's the kind of radio program I would do in Timor one day. They would cut me off the air. but his approach, you know, is really, you know, hilarious.
Malarkey.
No, he didn't. Oh, he
really?
Told me he listened to Howard Stern. And so they did kind of a wacky show on him listening to Howard Stern and played him pieces of Howard Stern. And at the time, he was the representative from East Timor to the United Nations. And so had to be very diplomatic all the time. And so Howard Stern, I guess, led his other side out. But he was an amazing. You gave him a full hour, right? And just, you know, battling for freedom in East Timor. He got to talk about all sorts of things. It was really an amazing experience.
Yeah, and he was an amazing thinker and quite a guy. What else do you remember?
Let's see. I do remember, I mean, now that you bring up the crashing into, I remember being slightly panicked as you would come in and it would be right before the BBC played at the top of the hour on the show and you'd be just drifting in like it was nothing major. So, and, you know, and you always made your mark and got on in time, but that was a little scary. And then I also remember you being generous enough to let me host for a week. And I did a lot of book interviews during that time. I think I got to interview Amy Goodman. And so it was a great experience. You mentored us sufficiently so we could fill your shoes, but only for 5 days at a time.
Is there any greater lesson that you think Chicago has gotten out of Worldview?
I think that international news matters and that it actually matters locally. And I think that's what the show was pretty amazing at doing. And one of the things that I thought really represented that, and I think it was Andrea Wenzel's idea of this Global Activism Expo and Global Activism Thursdays, and the idea that there were many people in Chicago who really cared deeply about international events and were willing to volunteer and use their non-working hours to build something, to kind of build a movement around issues that they were passionate about. And in addition to the hard news that you were updating, you were also bringing these folks in on a regular basis. And I think you formed a real community around doing good on international affairs locally.
All right. We recently celebrated the life of Miloš Stalick in the program. And do you have a Miloš story you'd like to share?
I have a Miloš story. We were recording Roberto Benigni. And trying to do – this is a crashing story as well.
The Italian director and star who was very big.
Life is Beautiful, right, which is about the – you know, oddly enough, kind of a humorous film with edges about the Holocaust. And he was speaking downtown. I can't remember which Jewish group, but it was fairly large. And he was running very late, and his PR person – didn't want to give us very much time. And we had an exact hole to fill on the show. It had to be so much time. So in the middle of the interview, she cuts us off. And we're panicking because we knew that we had to get it on the air within like 45 minutes or something. I had to get it over to you and take a cab and get it back. This was when it was probably mini disc and, you know, all contained. So there was no kind of live feed from this hotel. And so she cut us off. We knew we didn't have enough time, and we were panicking. And then Roberto Benigni said, kind of held a hand to her, and then he said, why don't you ask that question again so I can answer it? Because he knew it would be easy to edit that way. And so Miloš jumped in, did it the total pro that he was. And then later I had my car towed as we were coming out of the hotel. And Miloš, you know, took me down and we got our car back. So hero twice in that day, Miloš.
These are the best days of your life, weren't they?
They actually were, Joe. And it's the rest of the life was pretty good, but these were really fun days. These were really fun days. And then they put me in good stead. I went to the Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, and everybody was shocked by my knowledge. You know, maybe it's part because they were from other countries, but we went to the Peruvian ambassador's house, right, in Washington, D.C., and we got to ask some questions, and I asked about Lori Berenson, who was an activist who had been imprisoned there for her connection to a revolutionary group. And nobody else knew who Lori Berenson was. Now, granted, these were people from, you know, from India, from Israel, from Kurdistan, Iraqi, you know, Kurdistan. But they were all impressed, and they said, "Where did you learn that?" And I said, "Worldview."
Edie, you brought your son and his friend.
Can we bring him? Can
yeah,
we bring him on to say
Let's
it?
Let's do it.
Okay. My son is, I'm going to shout out, although I guess I don't have to shout if he's right here. My son is Max Fouts. Can you say hi, buddy?
Hi.
No, regular voice. Regular voice, kiddo.
Hi.
He's 9, if that helps. Hi. And then Griff Walker, you want to say hi, too?
Hi.
Great. You want to hear what they've been practicing?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay, come in closer to the mic, guys.
Congratulations on a great run.
Thank you. Yay. Nice to have you guys on. Thank you very much, Edie Rabinowitz, professor at Northeastern University and producer number 2 around here.
Producer number 2. Makes me sound like bachelorette number 2. Thank you, Jerome. It was a tremendous honor to produce the show. Transformative experience. And it's an honor to be here today.
Coming up after the break, we'll continue our producer fest and talk with Jonah Meadows. He's now the North Shore editor for Patch.com. I'm Jerome McDonnell. You're listening to Worldview on WBEZ. This is Worldview on WBEZ. I'm Jerome McDonnell. Worldview ends its 25-year run tomorrow, and today we're talking with some of the people who made the program great, the producers, and Jonah Meadows is here. He is now North Shore editor for Patch.com, and Jonah was a producer from 2006 to 2009. Great to see you, Jonah.
Great to see you, Jerome.
Jonah, the thing I remember about you is you loved everything. You, like, usually somebody likes doing something more than another, but you loved everything, even the promos, which most people think is a terrible task. I would write this piece of slop copy and then just bring it in to you because I knew you'd fix it. And there was just, you know, you loved the pledge drives. You were, I remember you playing clips of Edward R. Murrow during the pledge drives, and you loved the Sirius satellite system that we were on and trying to find out if people were listening. You were sending people books.
Are you still on satellite radio?
No. Is satellite radio still a thing? I am not. But you loved it all, Jonah. It was so great to have you.
Well, you know, it was really your style that was so inspiring, because I think of you as, like, it's rare to see in the media somebody who's like a real Renaissance man and like an encyclopedia. You know, you could ask about a country or a period, an event, and you would have this like backlog of knowledge that you just right at your fingertips. And I've never worked with anyone like that since, who has such like a diverse range of knowledge. And It was that was what was so inspiring, really, about working here.
You brought so many interesting things to the show. You had a thing for origin stories of faith groups and apocalypse, and we did a series on apocalyptic,
the end of the world,
and it was made into a book. Some folks called us up and made this into a book. They included it in their kind of arty book. Front 40 Press is an arty label and a great big coffee table book. And they put signs of the apocalypse or rapture. And they did a verbatim transcript of our thing that we did.
That was very weird. Definitely not what I was expecting putting that series together. That was an interesting time, because it was sort of the final years of the second Bush administration. It was the final it was deep into the Iraq War. It was the surge. There was a lot of stuff going on in that period that I think maybe we're still feeling some reverberations of. And I think there was also a mood in the air leading up to the end of the Mayan calendar too. I think that might have also been an inspiration.
The Mayan calendar was a big thing.
Yeah.
Now, one of the other things you did was we decided to call this guy there were people flying airplanes and using GPS coordinates and putting little mini cameras on them along the border of Mexico and the United States. And they wanted to catch the people who were crossing the border. And you decided we should call one of these guys and talk to him about what he's doing down there. And so we pulled a clip of that. And this is Glenn Spencer talking about his border drones.
Searching for people with an airplane is that you've got to know where to look. And you have to keep that circle of search as small as possible, because, you know, they're very elusive. They don't want to be found. You see, the other people who are trying to get into the United States, these are sentient beings, and they come up with strategies to defeat these systems.
Do you think there's other groups out there who are going to do what your group did and, you know, decide to have some kind of surveillance over some kind of area? Some people are worried about groups that are terrorist in nature, that they could use unmanned aerial vehicles in the future and to nefarious means. Does it ever strike you?
Well, it's certainly possible. You know, we're well aware of, very familiar with how these systems work. And yes, you could launch one of these things into the sky. Give it a GPS coordinate to go to and run right into the ground. You could do that. We're promoting the use of these things, but we're going to be very honest about it. Now, they have to have some level of sophistication. They have to have people working together in a coordinated way who are pretty bright. And that is generally not the profile of the guys who are blowing things up.
Well, there you go. That was Glenn Spencer doing his own border patrol, one of the voices that we brought to you on Worldview, and Jonah Meadows had that idea.
Blast from the past. 10 years later, look what happens in Saudi Arabia with some drones.
Yeah, we got it going on all the time. So here, Jonah, what else do you remember about doing the show? What was fun for you?
Well, I remember Andrea, when I first started, really showing me the ropes and teaching me how to put together the show and sort of the workflow of the show. And that was the one remodel before the most recent remodel of the station. And you and Steve and Andrea were working in this tiny closet like next to the CD archive room. In extremely cramped quarters, there was no room for any intern in there. But
yeah, I just saw pictures of it for the first time in years. But we were during a remodeling. There were four of us piled in a teeny little room. We tried to make it as fun as possible.
Yeah, it definitely was a little bit of a party cubby in there. I remember the start of the global activism series and working. Seeing Nyssa really take the lead on that and watching Breeze grow it into this expo and become its own community and really take on a life of its own. And that's, I think, something that's going to live on past the end of this quarter century of Worldview.
Yep, me too. What about I remember you were very far ahead of the game on chemicals, and we did a lot of things about chemicals, BHA, the things that were in all our drinking containers and everything.
Microplastics.
And, yeah. You were all over that stuff.
Yeah, the environment, I think, is one of the subjects that lends itself to Worldview's mission because it is a global thing. It disproportionately impacts the marginalized communities and everywhere that there are environmental issues, you'll find that. And it also doesn't get the attention that it deserves in conventional media. I mean, you look last week, I believe, there was more climate coverage than there'd been in the last 3 or 4 years when you look at broadcast and print media. And so I think Worldview is really filling in a hole when it came to environmental coverage and climate coverage. And I hope to see more of that from you.
We're talking with former producers of Worldview. Jonah Meadows is now North Shore editor for Patch.com. And one of the things we were chatting about before the break is the unusual journalism landscape. And you are covering the North Shore, one of the most wealthy communities in North America, and there's not a lot of people doing it. There's an ever decreasing number of people doing it, and I think that's one of the things that's really changing in the media landscape.
Yeah, and I think that's why also public media is different and special, and something that the listeners have a chance to make sure that it doesn't go away. And the listeners have a chance to be a part of it. And that's, I mean, Worldview and its relationship with its listeners, whether they're driving a taxi around Chicago, whether they're living out in the suburbs, whether they're new to Chicago, whether they've been here for generations, like it is a truly public program. It has been a public program on a public media station. And I think that even in the last 10 years, you look at the rise of social media and the collapse of regional newspapers and the kind of layoffs that you've seen at a lot of different media companies, public media has been able to survive because it has the support of dedicated listeners. And they're – I mean, I guess this isn't a pledge drive really, but
You're getting there, man.
But I think that's why Worldview has been able to exist for 25 years. It wouldn't exist on a commercial station. There's no way. There's no question about that. But to have 25 years of this sort of relationship with the community, to build these connections with the Chicagoland community, the global community in Chicago, to make the global connections for people living in Chicago, there's only one place. There's only one venue really where that can happen.
You know, one of the things you mentioned chatting was also the collapse of trust in government that we've seen, I mean, just in the last 10 years. And I happen to be reading the Peter Beinart piece that's in The Atlantic about measles and what it says about our country. And he quoted some statistics that I really did find startling, that in the 1960s, when everybody was getting their vaccinations, 77% of people said they trusted government to do the right thing. Now it's under 20% of people trust the government to do the right thing. And we've got a measles outbreak, you know, out the wazoo. So it's I think that's something that kind of slips our mind sometimes, how far down trust in government's gone.
I think a lesson that I came away with in the experience of working here, and maybe it took me a while to fully internalize it, is that there's a conventional wisdom that it's incompetence is more likely than malfeasance. And the more interaction you have with government, I think the more you can realize that that's the truism and something. I think when you talk about trust in government, people too often assume malfeasance, and that has spread. And this feeling that the media is conspiring, the government is conspiring, to cover things up, to do this and that. Really, the more you interact with it, the more you realize they're just not really very good at doing their jobs.
Jonah Meadows is now the North Shore editor for Patch.com. He was Worldview producer from 2006 to 2009. Thanks for joining us and talking about producing Worldview all these years. Tomorrow's the last show. We're going to have Jeffrey Winters on from Northwestern, somebody I've talked to for all 25 years of the show. We're going to talk about Indonesia, income inequality, and what we've learned over the last 25 years. Hope you can join us. I'm Jerome McDonnell. You've been listening to Worldview on WBEZ.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.